mutual statements that indicate you're in a serious relationship and you get input. Now down here, not a whole lot. But right up here, you need to take the initiative before you get into a stated or defined serious relationship. Okay. Other questions, Doug? Oh yeah. Beginning here on, you need more input. In fact, the further you go, the more input you need. You want to start our questions?
Okay.
I'll start with question two. During engagement, should the physical standards stay the same or be more strict? These are the questions you've given us. During engagement, you need to have an awful lot of input because the two of you are growing into one. I would suggest many of you may get engaged, will probably get engaged after you leave Glen Eyrie and after you're in contact with somebody who can help you in premarital counseling. But you need to have at least six sessions, and I'll use that word six, maybe seven, more the better, six sessions with somebody who is able to help the two of you grow into one. Questions like... got some old files here. I generally write down the questions. One of the things I always do is have a couple turning physical standards for their dating, for their engagement. For example, let me get somebody to pass these out. Greg, would you pass these out? Some purity and motivational standards and verses that a couple that I have counseled in premarital counseling have given to themselves. The way I handle it is that I have them write it down at the outset of our time together in engagement, and I have them give me a copy, and I know exactly what they're going to be doing, what they're not going to be doing based on this contract. And just before their wedding, I ask them, have you maintained this? So I would say engagement is just as important, in fact, more important, to have physical standards because you're not married yet. Now, if you look at these verses and the motivation, and then you look at their commitment, their contract, you realize that they have a very high standard. And I would submit to you that this is getting close to the ideal. There is no such thing as being too pure before you're married. Now, the world calls that a prude, but God calls it godliness and purity. Other things that I would do in engagement, while we're on the subject, I ask questions about their parents. Most of us tend to have our role model of a marriage from our parents. Good, bad, or indifferent, it just is. And so I want to find out what their parents' communications patterns were, how they handled conflict as parents, because what you have seen as a child while growing up is the way you're probably going to come to marriage, or the patterns you're going to have when you come to marriage. So what I want to do is get it up front with both sets of parents. Knowing that background, then I have some sort of indication on how I'm going to help this couple deepen their communication and their conflict resolution. A couple on engagement, a handbook for engaged couples. You can get the author later. Three to Get Ready. Both are excellent books. A workbook I take couples through in premarital counseling is Communication, Key to Your Marriage. An absolute must. Marriages dissolve generally over three issues. Communication, sex, and finances. If you deal with communication, chances are you've dealt with the other two issues. So I would say communication is the most important issue, and I really work on that in premarital counseling. I deal with finances. I make sure a couple comes up with a budget. I make sure that they have talked about their standard of living, which goes beyond just the immediate budget. I make sure that they have similar life goals. We talk about, and if they have unresolved conflict, have patterns of conflict they can't overcome, and we try to nail those down and give them ways to deal with it. Here's another couple. They gave me just a little piece of paper. Physical standards for this couple. We have decided that kissing and hand-holding should be our limit while engaged. Now, the world would say, that's crazy. But I think it's a good idea. It's very pure. Another thing I have couples do is that I decide before they get married where they're going to spend their first Thanksgiving and their first Christmas. Now, you might laugh at that, but you would be amazed at how much pressure and manipulation goes on to get the newlyweds at their home for both Christmas and Thanksgiving. And that becomes a real battle between in-laws. So if the couple decides and announces well in advance, that will not eliminate the manipulation and pressure, but it will reduce it. And for some couples, that's a bigger issue than others. Anyway, there's an awful lot that you need to cover in engagement. So physical standards is just part of it, but I wanted to get that in while I was on the subject of engagement. Do question one.
There are two, three questions. They had to do with long-distance relationships. I take it there are few happening or in the midst of out there. And from the positive end, you know, it's a good way to get to know somebody. We do especially recommend the tape thing because you can fill up so much more time. You can tell so much more than in a letter in such a short amount of time. And it certainly, you know, reduces the temptation of the flesh. On the negative end, eventually a couple's got to get to the point either where at some point in that relationship they have had everyday contact. They can't just do it through long distance. And the thing to guard against, I think, the greatest hindrance, and it's an incredible mental battle, but the thing to guard against is fantasizing, you know, projecting more into that letter than what was there, more into the telephone conversation was there, because you can't see them the next day to clarify it anyway. And then mentally letting yourself take that relationship further than where God has shown it.
I think if we get into the next one, we're going to go into a lot more time than we have.
Want to stop?
Yeah. Why don't we stop? Okay, Kevin, why don't you guys pass these out here? We have given you, or are giving you, a list of missionary dating pros and cons. We're to be of the world, in the world, but not of the world. And yet, many of us find ourselves asked out or by a non-Christian or involved in a small group or even one-to-one encounter with non-Christians. And we have to say, now, what are the dangers of this? What are the positive things? And this, perhaps this list will help you. A very simple principle is you tend to marry who you date. So if you don't want to marry a non-Christian, be real careful about dating a non-Christian. It's about that simple. We have seen the pattern like this. Mismatch, that is, Christian with non-Christian, starts out with a rationalization. Oh, no big deal. I can date this person and probably won't hurt me. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But sometimes when you give in and go out, you've actually compromised your convictions for the sake of being esteemed in that person's eye as not a prude or not somebody who's super spiritual, monastery oriented or whatever. So you give in and go out. If that keeps up for a period of time, you fall in love. When you fall in love, you must make a choice. Either you go back to the Lord, or you continue on with the relationship. If you marry, continue on with the relationship, you've gotten yourself in a pattern of spiritual decline. Paula led a girl named Louise to Christ down at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And Louise got involved in the situation here. She said to herself, "Oh, this is a nice guy, and he goes to church some too." So she gave in and went out. She fell in love. It continued for a while. Fell in love, and she had to make a choice. Is she going to marry him, hoping that he would become a Christian, or based on his spiritual, current spiritual half-heartedness? Or is she going to follow the Lord with her whole heart and avoid a relationship like this? She decided to get married. About a year after they married, we got a letter from Lois, or Louise, and she said, "You know, this guy, I think he's an atheist. He doesn't go to church anymore, and I'm involved in this church doing this and this and this." But you could just read between the lines how sad and upset she was because of that relationship and that choice she made. The problem is that our heart is so deceitful. Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 14 made a choice. Go to 1 Kings 11. 1 Kings 11, verse 1. "Now Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of the Pharaoh, the Moabite, the Ammonite, the Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women." Verse 2. "From which the nation, from the nations concerning which the Lord said to the sons of Israel, 'You shall not associate with them, neither shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away from the Lord.'" It's not "it might," but "it surely will turn your heart away from the Lord." Verse 3, "He had 700 wives, 300 concubines, and his heart was turned away from the Lord." Just exactly what the Lord said. What happened when Solomon married one of these women? Well, they brought their value system, their gods, right into the capital city of Israel. And they set up their own little mini culture. Solomon went, verse 5, "went after the Ashereth, the goddess of Sidonians, and Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. And Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord." Verse 7, Solomon built a high place to Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. Here's a guy that was an honest-to-goodness Christian, a man of God when he started. But because he rationalized, said, "Well, I'm big enough, it won't hurt me," the consequences were spiritual decline. And I assure you, just as much as I'm standing here, that your spiritual life, your spiritual future will rise or fall depending on the person you marry. And our observation has been, though we don't have a verse on it, but a marriage falls to the lowest spiritual common denominator. So if you marry a guy who's half-hearted, just give it time, you'll be half-hearted too. Or if you marry a gal who doesn't have the Lord on their heart like you do, then you just count on being at that level, the other person's level, the rest of your life. We've always seen it go down, never seen it go up. That doesn't mean it can't. It just means we haven't seen it. So this is a very important decision. And you could end up mismatched if you rationalize and compromise convictions that you are establishing now and will be in the next couple weeks. Yeah, that's
the same principle applies to Christians.
Yeah, you want to marry somebody who has the same goals, same life goals, general life goals. Because if you don't, and you feel the Lord's called you to a certain place in His kingdom, maybe, for example, I've seen this too many times. A guy feels, he goes to seminary, says, or gets in the nav and says, "You know, I think I'm going to the mission field." And then he gets married, and the gal he marries doesn't want to go to the mission field. You think he's in the mission field now? Uh-uh. Not one bit. If he went, he'd get wiped out and come right back. 2 Corinthians 6:14 is a good verse to memorize on this. Do not be bound together with unbelievers, for what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness, or what fellowship is light with darkness? Or what harmony has Christ with Belial? Or what is a believer in common with an unbeliever? And so on. This is on the Christian, non-Christian. We know for sure it's God's will for you not to marry a non-Christian. Now, whether you date a non-Christian, there are pros and cons, and I've tried to list out as completely as we can pros and cons of that. Yeah, Susan?
I know some of us were talking about last week is, let's say you are working or you're going to college, and a fellow asks you out who's not a Christian, and you don't want to appear to be a prude, and you don't want to reject him as an individual, but you certainly don't want to go out with him. How do you handle that tactfully in a way that will bring glory to God and also let him know very clearly that you do not want to go?
Well, no non-Christian guy has ever asked me out, so I can't answer that one. Can you answer that? Or somebody?
I would tend to say if you can do something casually with him, that it's not such a formalized date where you can get a picture, some sort of a feel for where he is, that you're on the safest ground. I don't think the world would come to an end. And I'm saying this, Susan, like for where you are and for where the person you're talking to probably was. To go out with somebody one time and to give that the mental try and ask God to show you in that one time pretty much where he was. I think it's a pretty general rule of thumb that the mouth speaks from that which fills the heart. That it doesn't take very long with somebody to be able to pick up where they are. But I think in your mind you have to have a real firm cutoff in it. That you know past that certain point, the next time you'll say you've got other plans, or you just come out and say, I just really sense that you know, our lives are just on two different wavelengths. And I can pretty well guarantee you won't call you back after you say that.
Because I don't feel comfortable saying I have other plans if I don't have other plans. So, just explaining them.
What? Yeah. If you can't think of other plans to have other plans, then you have to say that you just sense that the two of you would be, the two of you are on two different wavelengths. I can remember a guy in college that I was going out with that to me was tempting because I knew my mother would just have, that would have been what met her bill, you know, and not that Stacy wasn't, but eventually, you know, very quickly actually it came to that, and it was, you know, you just had to admit it. A lot of people would say you just wouldn't go out at all until you knew for sure, and with a young Christian, that would be the first thing I said. But when I say that to your question, I'm taking into account, so to speak, giving you more credit for being firmer than where a non-Christian would be.
Okay, we're going to try to field some questions now that you all have written us. Honey, do you want to start?
Okay. This one said, if you would like to see a relationship progress. Yeah, I was having trouble seeing through that. If you would like to see a relationship progress and the woman indicates she doesn't want a deeper commitment level, what do you do? And then other questions would say, you know, essentially, can you return to the level of just being friends? And that's a tough one, but I think at that point you have to consider the other person's response, male or female, as being a closed door from the Lord. And what it does is to test, really, whether or not you really did hold that relationship openly. And we're asking God to make clear what he wanted there. I think, personally, maybe some of y'all have some more ideas on that, but I think the only way it can genuinely turn and return to just a friendship, is if you can move it to the realm of the sovereignty of God, where you see that God closed the door, so there is not anger and hurt that is personalized in some way toward that person. Maybe that would be a good one for people to comment on.
How many have not heard that? Okay. How many have heard it and don't know what it means? Okay. Let me, maybe it'd be a good time to go into that.
Wasn't that your question?
Yeah, that's in here, Sam. Well, when I get to it, I'll just ignore it and go ahead and deal with it now. From one clear-cut area of a relationship to the next, you need to define the relationship. Now, so often what happens in our deceitful heart is that we read into what is being said or what is being communicated verbally and nonverbally. What we're asking you to do or to consider is this. Define the dating relationship whenever you move from point one to point two or point two to point three or whatever. Here's the purpose. To clarify the present status of the relationship from a personal point of view. Not where you think it's going in the future, because that has a way of manipulating. That communicates a commitment that's not there. But it's where the relationship is point now. In the present time. Not where you think it's going, where it is now. Now, when you do this, for example, somebody says, you know, I think we need to pursue our relationship a little bit more frequently, or we need to be thinking about more long range. In other words, you're saying to the person you're relating to, you know, I think we have more than just a friendship here. Well, that's where you are. And that's real healthy, I think. But you put yourself out on a limb. You made yourself vulnerable. That's, I think, what this person was asking here. The other person either accepts what you're saying with an agreement, yeah, that's where I am too, or they say, no, I don't feel like we need to go on. I don't feel more than just a friendship. It's a communications issue is what it is. Often a person will communicate non-verbally, through physical involvement or whatever, a commitment that has not been stated verbally, and I think that's defrauding. Point blank defrauding. Deceiving people. Particularly men do this to women. When do you do this? Well, at each change in the relationship. Now, we've given you a simplistic and somewhat artificial graph here. There's no way in our mind we can come up with a complete model on how this develops. So you just have to read into what I'm saying, that it's not quite as cut and dried as I have it on this graph. But each time you want to go deeper in the relationship, that's when you redefine. Or if you're going to back off, in other words, break up, or go back to a more casual friendship. And caution. Don't share expectations of the relationship beyond the current status. Don't say, you know, something like this. I think there's something more. Now, you're in a casual dating relationship, okay? I think God has something more in store for us, perhaps even marriage. Well, that's a no-no. You haven't asked that person to marry you. The guy hasn't. So all you're saying, all you want to say is, I think we have more here than just a friendship. And both of you need to admit that before it will go any further. Okay? Chris?
I think in response to the original question in terms of having to back up, I think one thing that is that you have to, if you have to back up, just at least make it very clear in communication that, like say, if I want to back up in a relationship with a girl, it's not necessarily something that she's done wrong, or if there's something wrong with her, but I've made a mistake, or I'm just, you know, I've made a poor decision or something, and we need to go back. As far as keeping a friendship, there may be times where you just can't. And you need to explain to her and say, you know, look, we can't be friends right now. It's not easy for me, and I don't think it's easy for you. And not even try and deal with it, and avoid it.
Yeah, here at the Glen, it's going to be real hard to do that. But at the same time, we have enough acceptance of one another, as demonstrated with Scott the other day, that I think we can heal one another through the acceptance in a difficult time like that. Mike, you had something before we go to Gary. The question is, what if you've already talked about marriage and you're really not ready for that? In other words, you talked expectations when the relationship is back on a serious. Talked about marriage, you know, which is an engagement issue, way back on the beginnings of a serious. Do you have any comments on that?
You've just got to admit that you spoke prematurely, and that, Mike, are you trying to say that it isn't just though a question of speaking prematurely? You sense that. Essentially, you've changed your mind on what you originally thought, and you sense the guy's not leading that way. Is that what you mean?
No, the sense I was taking of it is just that they were talking about it, they shouldn't have talked about it, and they built expectations. They shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a deep commitment in his heart, he said he was just talking about
it. It was just a comment to him.
To her, it wasn't just a comment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think from the girl's point of view, she needs to be real suspect about that kind of relationship. From the guy's point of view, he's probably impulsive and operating more under sensuality or lust. Not knowing the case, I don't know what you're talking about in terms of personalities. But
yeah, I think the awkwardness that you feel in that situation is what you call a breach of trust, you know. And I think that if I were a girl in that situation, it would be just a real big red light for me. I would have pulled so far back that it would probably take 3 dozen roses to convince me that he even had the mildest interest, you know.
Yeah. Some guys know how to manipulate gals by saying certain words. On the other hand, some gals know how to manipulate guys by doing certain actions. So you got to, if you just really have to be suspect. That's why we're encouraging a waiting, slow approach, step by step, because at any point you have to have the freedom before the Lord to back out. And if a person doesn't give you that freedom, then they're not under the lordship of Christ. They're under their own manipulation, their own fleshly desires.
Mm-hmm. So when one of them makes a decision to move to be with the other person, it's like a commitment. They're not killing the marriage anymore, it's just a commitment. How does that happen?
Well, the way that happened with us is that I asked Paula to move out there to Fort Worth. She was just graduated from University of Tennessee. And she said, well, I can't do that. There's not enough commitment. And I don't know what words she used, but I really thought about that for several weeks. And it was at that point I decided, well, you know, if she's ever going to come out here, I'm going to have to make a commitment that I feel the Lord wants me to make, and that is to get engaged. And so I called her up one night at 12 o'clock from a Kmart payphone. I don't recommend my approach. But she said yes. That was the commitment that we needed for her to come out. Okay, now that was a long-term commitment. You know, she came out and lived with Lewis and Kay Hill for about 3 months.
I barely survived it.
They did, yeah.
We found out that since we've had 2 or 3 living with us. But I think we should add to that, you know, that could be a subtle means in a way that a woman can manipulate a man. So it's like, I'm not taking this step until you take that one, kind of thing. And I just got finished talking to somebody a day or two ago where I encouraged her that if she made that move, that she was in the kind of situation where she probably could not be engaged before she moved. She would have to feel so strongly that God wanted her to move to this place, that even if the relationship didn't work out, she would feel that God had something else for her in that place. And that's sort of an unusual situation to do. But in the context of the age that I was and my mother, there's no way that I could have gone halfway across the country for this to pursue a relationship, you know, if they say in navigator terms. So, plus we were at a point where, and I think Stacy really realized, his decision had already been made. Is a question of timing.
Yes. We will say that our pattern is not to be reproduced, nor is any other pattern to be reproduced in your life. God is going to do something unique with each one of you. And if there end up being 60 marriages out of this group with different people, then there will be 60 different scenarios. Gary? Nancy.
Can't you talk about the relationship too soon in the relationship and how do you not do that?
Okay, can't you talk too soon about the relationship in the relationship? Yes, you can. The way you do that is you start talking about we and us. And we've encouraged you several times already today not to use that pronoun. It's probably the guy's initiative to say, hey, I feel more that our relationship has more to it than just friendship. Okay, the guy should generally take initiative at each step. Not exclusively. I mean, that may be cultural. Do you have anything to add on that?
No, just that it is true that God does put women all their life, really, but this situation brings it out in that unique place of waiting on a man. Not a lot of fun sometimes, but it is a matter of waiting for him to bring up something.
Okay, Doug, you had one. I agree with that. Now, this is really one of our crucial doctrines, and that is seeking spiritual input, as well as parental input, depending on your value systems of your parents. The more input you get, the better you are. Somebody else back here? Colette? Okay, the question is how does a gal basically show disagreement whether he's officially or unofficially defined the dating relationship? In a sense, he unofficially defined the relationship by starting to talk about us and we, right? Both members in a dating relationship have responsibility to the Lord to communicate what's on their heart of that concerning that relationship from their personal point of view. So in other words, submission never takes part in this. In other words, a gal can make a unilateral decision. If the guy unofficially is saying we need to talk about future, a gal can make a unilateral decision and say, you know, I think all we have is a friendship. That's all I want it to be. And if she goes without her whole heart in it, then she's being manipulated, or she's being naive, or disobedient to the Lord.
Yeah, and I think, Colette, you can just say, you know, I don't feel comfortable talking about that right now. It puts pressure on me that I'm not able to handle. I'm just enjoying the freedom of just getting to know you and not having to think about what it's leading to and something down the road. And if the guy has any sensitivity, he'll pick that up.
Henry,
then we'll...
Okay, I would say you define where you want to go, not evaluate where you have been. So you're taking initiative to And when I say define where you want to go, the next level, not the long range. Okay? So like if you're casually dating a gal and you don't talk about, well, you know, we've only been casually dating now. You basically say, you know, I think that we have more than a friendship here. Maybe we ought to see each other a little bit more. Something like that. Okay? Let's go on to next one, number 8.
Okay,
how do you learn to share the person you are going out with other people when you feel like being jealous or possessive? I would say that if you have jealousy or possessiveness, that the Bible would call both of those desires of the flesh. And I'd be real suspect in my own heart if I had that feeling. I'd probably, if I had those feelings, I was clinging, wanting this just for myself. That is one of the danger signs in a carnal relationship. What you want to do is be able to say at any point in a relationship, Lord, this relationship I put on the altar. If you want to take it today, you can take it today. I give you the right to that my future with this person. Now, that's pretty easy to say when it's a casual friendship. It gets a lot harder to say when you're seriously dating or engaged. But at any point, you need to be able to say that.
It's really the fear of losing someone that is not grounded in the sovereignty of God. And when you go back to that paradox that we talked about earlier this morning of how God increases your desire for the person, but at the same time increases your willingness to relinquish the relationship, then as that happens, and you're in the process of really waiting on God, those fears subside. And there are two verses, I think, that in my mind particularly come to my mind related to this. The one Stacy mentioned, Ecclesiastes 3:14, where he says, I know that everything that God does will remain forever. There's nothing you can add to it. There's nothing you can take away from it. In other words, God will bring this about, and you don't have to help it all that much. Then the one in Job 2:42, where he says, I know that thou canst do all things, and no purpose of thine can be thwarted. So if you can get to the point where you relax in the sovereignty of God, then those other people out there are not a threat. And then the temptation to be coupled off publicly in order to announce the turf is not so strong.
One of the things you're saying by clinging to a relationship through jealousy or possession is that my best is better for me than God's best. It's not the case. God's best is better for you always than your best for yourself. Now, that concept came to me when we were dating, that I realized that if Paula was not God's best, then God's best was far better than Paula. And see, now, if you have that open-handed approach, having the relationship on the altar, you can say that. And you can break it off if that's what God wants you to do. But if you don't have that open-altered approach, then you're going to have the attitudes of possessiveness and jealousy, which are from the flesh. Okay, you want to do number 9?
Okay. This one said, I have a fairly close relationship with a girl here at the LDI. We see each other, but have so little time because of work, homework, ministry stuff. We both feel frustrated. How should we deal with the situation? We spend one night together on weekends and have about 3 meals together during the week and speak to one another 2 hours during the week. And Stacy and I, we were looking at that, and the thing that hit us both was that sounded like a really good description of a relationship that had some limits, that was going somewhere, but had some limits. And the reason there shouldn't be cause for that much frustration in that kind of situation is that it leaves room for the relationship to develop. But, you see, we all came into this situation wanting, we came here for far more than a relationship. If God gives you a wife or a husband as a result of your time here, that's wonderful. But you don't want to have so concentrated on that you actually miss the other things that are so unique to the situation you could have really gained. You could have had it all, essentially, possibly.
Okay, the next question, really 2 of them, and I'll read both of them before I speak to them. Here at the Glen, there seems to be an unspoken rule that if you do something, i.e. go to dinner, movies, with the same girl more than once, you're dating or going steady. I don't feel this is good. That's good. I don't think it's good either. Is this healthy? I'm not used to this back home. Back home, girlfriends and I went out on a casual friendship basis, but here it seems that if you go out too much with one party, you're dating. And then another question said the same thing. It seems like people in the LDA are dating, especially in regards to developing more than a friendship. How can this mindset be changed or in the future avoided? I think that you basically, what we're encouraging all singles, LDI, because it's the intensity is heightened here, even more so, we're encouraging you to have a lot of good friends with members of the opposite sex and to be real slow about getting into a one-to-one serious dating relationship. Now, if you have 2 years here, which most of you have, that's a long time to get to know people. So don't push it. Don't rush it. You don't have to get married tomorrow. And what this implies is a lot of people are shopping for a mate. I don't think that's real healthy. For the right people, it's okay. But to have it as a pressure to be paired up, I don't think it's healthy at all.
What do you mean by for the right people, it's okay?
If they have they thought through the principles, they know what God wants generally for their life, and they see somebody coming along the same line that they are life goal-wise, then it's all right to start dating more seriously. Age, maturity, direction, vision. Okay. And then number 14. Are you advising not to kiss on the mouth until you are serious? Only after you decided this is the only one I want to be seeing? Or only once you're engaged? In other words, kissing once you're engaged. In other words, the question is on the physical. Here's another question along the same lines. Should there be a set of physical standards during dating so that the two know where they stand? The answer to that is yes. Now, the next question you're going to ask is what? Well, I'm going to let you do some Bible study. If you would, turn to 1 Thessalonians 4. There are a couple places in Scripture where God explicitly says, this is my will for you. 1 Thessalonians 4 is one of those cases. Now, I'm not the one doing the choking. The Bible is going to say some things to us. And the Bible has a few things to say about the physical. And I believe they're found in 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 3 through 8. If you would, personally, just take a minute to read those five verses. You might read verses 1 and 2 just to get the context. Write down what the Bible says about what two believers are to do and what two believers are not to do in a male-female non-married relationship. Gary.
By the movie ratings.
That's one way.
When you question yourself.
Explain that a little bit, Chris.
You're involved in, well, it's usually after the fact, and you question yourself whether that was right or not.
You start rationalizing. Well,
doubt. And if you even doubt, then I would really evaluate whether you should do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any outside input.
Mm-hmm. Or if the outside input is saying, hey, watch out, you guys are in trouble. I mean, you're in danger is what they mean.
I think a pure part of a relationship is if somebody asks you what you were doing, being so open to say what you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're trying to hide it.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent point.
Yeah, the unhindered ability to pray at the end of the evening.
Okay, the reason why this is important, the world, in a relationship, there'll be the spiritual, intellectual, emotional, and physical. The world starts with the physical generally and never gets to the spiritual. They may get to know a person emotionally and intellectually, but they never get there. What we're trying to encourage you to do is to start with the spiritual, intellectual, and emotional, and don't go to the physical until you're married. Go ahead.
One question to throw out. I'd just be interested in hearing from y'all's backgrounds. What are the reasons that people say that?
The reasons why. I said.
In other words, why is it that you never sit through a talk like this, but what people are encouraging you not to enter the physical arena? Why do they say that?
Why am I saying what I just said? Yeah.
My.
Uh-huh. Progression? What do you mean?
Catapult. Uh-huh.
Okay. Chris? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Johnny? Excellent. It's an it, not a person.
Mm-hmm.
Tends to be.
Tends to be,
yeah. Rob? Good point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, who's it hurting, really? Both of you, yeah. And if you really say, you know, if you really care for that person, then you don't want to hurt that person. And you don't want to see yourself hurt, that's for sure. The prudent sees evil and hides himself, but the naive goes on and is punished for it.
There are two other ones that just come to my mind off the top that possibly you've heard before. And that is, from a woman's perspective, you don't build into her psychological makeup the thing of starting and stopping and starting and stopping. It's not healthy. And if I were a guy, I sure wouldn't want to marry a woman I had built that into her psychological makeup for the other side of marriage. And the second one is something Stacy and I discovered just from reading the book, The Myth of the Greener Grass. Have any of you picked that book up? Probably not. It's on the idea of how it is that couples so often now get into adultery. And he describes in that book one whole chapter of a pastor who had relationships with two women in his church, you know, all the time he continued to pastor consecutively two women. And his wife knew about it and was, you know, waiting for him to come out of it, essentially. But his explanation of it to me was incredible. He said he and his wife had had premarital relations, and he said that before marriage, essentially, he got used to what he would call the thrill of stolen fruits. And then on the other side of marriage, you see, marriage could not offer him that. It is a deeper thrill. It's better, but it's not the same. And so the interest in other women was that same thrill of stolen fruit. And there's a sense in which you set yourself up psychologically for a fall on the other side.
I'd like to give a graph here on the physical and dating. Three major areas. There's the immoral, the carnal, and the godly. And I'd like to explain it from my concept, and I hope this is a spiritual, the scriptural concept. First of all, immoral, no problem. It's motivated by lust and physical involvement. Most of us in this room will not be in this kind of relationship, or you wouldn't be here. That doesn't mean there's a guarantee. Like Skip says, there are no rubber bullets. You violate certain principles, you'll end up right here. Second is the carnal. Now, this is where I fear for many people in the LDI, many even committed Christians, that they'll rationalize and end up in this carnal area. Here are the danger signs for carnality. I hope you can read this. First of all, the danger sign. Just take it by faith. It's there if you don't can't read it. Okay, first of all, it moves too deep too fast. That's a danger sign. That's not carnal. It's just a danger sign that there's probably some carnality involved. The lust of the flesh push, and the lust of the flesh would be impatient. God pushes for patience, which is the fruit of the Spirit, and waiting on God. So that's not a danger sign in and of itself, but it's an indicator. Secretive, it tends to be pretty much by itself. You probably heard of couples, you know, they're oblivious to everything because they're in love. Well, that's not God's view of love, I don't believe. It's secretive in a different way. It's secretive in that I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing. It's not secretive in the relationship, you know, being up front with the relationship. In fact, the very next thing we'll say, on down here I talk about having counsel. So it's not secretive. But if a person avoids counsel, then I would say that's another danger sign. Okay, what I'm saying is secretive, and another danger sign here is that you ignore or avoid spiritual counsel. That's what I mean by secretive. You don't tell people what you're doing. You know, close friends, accountability type friends. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Okay, that's the next one I'm going to talk about. Becomes obsessed with the relationship. Obsessed with the relationship. Us two, no more. This is the kind of person that it would apply like this at Glenary, where the two people have exclusive relationships and their friendships tend to diminish and wane. Their relationships with other women and other guys. And even cross-sexually. Danger sign, okay? Excludes others, kind of the same way of, another way of saying the same thing. And then avoids or ignores input from spiritual leaders and or parents. A danger sign. And then heavy physical involvement. But not the immorality that would be over in this section. Okay? Okay, now if it's a godly relationship, this is what we look for. Pure in motivation and action. Very limited, underlying very, limited physical contact. And I would say this all the way through to marriage. Okay, very limited physical contact. Underlying very, all the way through to marriage. And then number three, there's a spiritual focus about them. Spiritual focus. Their walk with God is still going. They're ministering to people and having fruit, for people your level anyway. They're not focused inwardly on themselves. They're still thinking of others, which is a godlike characteristic. I don't know, we'd go on.
Sharing with each other spiritually.
Sharing with each other spiritually. Motivating each other spiritually. Now, if a person is in this level at Glenary, you can rest assured that somebody's going to come and talk to you. Probably your friends have already talked to you. they may not have hard and fast reasons for talking to you, but they just have indicators, danger signs. That's all a person can have. Now, if a person is in this kind of relationship and is avoiding that input or ignoring it, then that's further indication that verifies that they're in the carnality type relationship. Now, what we wish for you, if you're in a dating relationship, is a godly, pure relationship. Because we know that down the road it's going to pay off. We know the consequences of having carnal relationships or immoral relationships. We've seen so many couples in every category here. We've counseled probably 30 couples premaritally during their engaged period, and we know very intimately what has happened during that time. And so, and we've seen the results of these couples after they've gotten married. So now, just take it by faith. If you, you know, if you don't see it yourself, just, we're trying to help you personally, and that's why we're sharing this stuff. Okay, any questions? Fred?
Is it instead of this deeper relationship, yes. I'm not talking about instead of carnal, but deeper relationship, the more close people are to counsel, seeking counsel, would you say that that would be true even in a godly relationship as well? In other words, if you wait too long before seeking spiritual counsel, relationship counsel, say that it's not a godly relationship.
I would say in a spiritual relationship, the further they go, the more counsel they want, because they see their need. They realize they have communication patterns, conflict resolution patterns that aren't real godly, and they have it open-handed before the Lord. I would say that's an indicator. The more close you get, the more carnal your relationship probably is. I would drive to where I could find it, or fly. You can't put a money figure on what it's worth, because it's worth your life, your spiritual future. Yeah, and you know, if you ever get in that, what I want to communicate to you, if you're engaged, you need spiritual counsel. And if you can't get that, wherever you are, then fly to Glen Eyrie and I'll help you. And there's always somebody around somewhere who knows you. We had, what couple drove from Stillwater to Tulsa? Yeah, Robert and Tammy Johnson, some of you may know them from Stillwater. Real godly relationship, and they would drive over from Stillwater, which is about hour and a half drive to Tulsa, for this input. And I would say they're better off for it. Okay. Right now we're going to take a 10-minute break.